Chapter 31. The Miramar game was set for Friday at home, the final regular season game before the sectionals, and senior night. There were banners around school, and an extra assembly was being thrown in on Monday, which was nothing more than a disguised football rally, but what the heck, you got out of class. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, Pike got an email from Jake Olson, the Utah State grad assistant, which thanked him for visiting the program, but ended by saying the school has trimmed its recruiting pool, and unfortunately his name has been withdrawn from consideration, but to not take it personally and continued good luck with his football career, wherever he might end up. Not a surprise, and Pike thought about it for maybe 2 seconds. He was curious how the bar pool player was, who he bear hugged though, and if Hayes felt better by the end of the weekend. Kathy found him at lunch. The latest was Reggie Riley would be in Woodling at a truck stop of all places Thursday morning. Woodling was along the interstate. You headed over to where In-N-Out was, then hopped on the freeway maybe 20 miles south, so about an hour from Beacon. "Should I go through with this?" Pike said. "Of course you should," Kathy said. "Why wouldn't you?" "I don't know. He doesn't seem all there. The aliens, the brother time traveling. Guys like this, they could easily have just been released from a mental hospital. And then they, like, find a job driving a big rig." Kathy said quietly, "I think you should go. I think you know you should go." Pike knew it too, of course. "Are you coming with me?" he said. "No," she said, "I'm sorry. I'm not comfortable being more involved than I already am." There was nothing Pike could say to that. He'd put it on her plate, the whole enchilada, when he let his emotion get the better of him. He regretted it big time. Kathy gave Pike Reggie's number. "I won't be in contact with him anymore," she said. "I feel like I did what I could." "You're not kidding," Pike said. "Come here." They hugged, and he hoped she knew how much he appreciated it, though the hug wasn't like the old days, and soon enough she was back with her friends at one of the tables in the quad, and they were laughing about something, so that was that. On Wednesday morning, word spread around school that Mr. Milburn had encountered Mr. Fox at the supermarket, Safeway, last night. Apparently Mr. Milburn spotted him in the meat section and took a run at him from about 20 yards away with his cart. It didn't sound like Mr. Fox was seriously injured, but the police came. You couldn't blame Audrey's dad one iota. He was just reacting, but this would only make matters worse and reinforce the injustice that might be developing. Fox, the murderer, with a slick lawyer, and Mr. Milburn, insanely, may be paying the bigger price. Pike tried Reggie Riley first thing out of bed Thursday morning. The guy picked up, and sure enough, he said he'd be in Woodling today, running the interstate there, as he put it. Pike asked him if there was a ballpark, and Reggie said he'd let him know and got off. This was starting to feel important, now that it might really be happening, and Pike was tossing around how he'd handle it if the guy got there during practice. Today was a walkthrough, everything light, the day before the game, but you couldn't miss it. Fortunately, he wasn't confronted with that decision. During physiology, second period, Pike standing over a lab bench with his partner. Reggie gets back to him. He'll be there in 45 minutes. Pike tore out of the classroom, didn't say a word to anyone, including Mr. Becker up there, and as he hustled to the car, he texted Reggie to please wait for him. He kept it at the speed limit, and it did take slightly over an hour, but Reggie had said look for him inside at the counter. He'd have a Clemson cap on, and there he was. Reggie wasn't what Pike expected. He was a little guy, neatly groomed, no facial hair, a Hawaiian shirt and shorts and running shoes. He could have been a guy who worked a regular corporate job, sitting there in his casual weekend attire. But then Reggie opened his mouth. "Howdy, partner. How you?" Which is more what Pike expected. Pike had always been curious about long-distance truckers. The thought of being on the open road all day appealed to him, and he couldn't help himself. He had a few questions. "You own your truck?" he asked Reggie, "or how's that work?" "In my case, I do," Reggie said. "Finance charges will do you wrong, though. Wouldn't recommend it." "Well, what are the best routes?" "Earnings-wise, that'd be 95, New York to Florida." "All around nice, though?" "Well, you got 80 through the mid-states, then you have your 101 out here, north out of Frisco to Seattle, Portland." Pike said, "How is it sleeping in the truck?" "I can sleep like a baby or not," Reggie said, "depending." "Do you ever get like a full 7 or 8 hours, or is it all broken up?" "Broke up," Reggie said. "This why we're meeting, though?" "No," Pike said. "I didn't mean to be stalling, if that's what you think, even though that's what he was doing. Could you please tell me a little more about your brother?" he said. "Why's that?" "Oh, no." Pike said, "I have to level with you then. I'm not at all saying I am, but it's possible I'm experiencing some of the same stuff." "What same stuff?" Reggie said, "going backwards in years." "That's it?" "I don't know. How's that work?" Or how did that work? How did it work for Billy? "All he tells me," Reggie said, "one day he's in the mess hall, breakfast. They just done their morning run like the Marines makes you do, straight out of bed. You considering the service, son?" "I don't know," Pike said, praying that's not the end of the story. "Confused, and after that, what did happen? All I picked up from my brother, he's busting his tray, and then somebody asked him to go outside and do something or bring something in. Don't really know. Then he says he's back in Charlotte, where we spent the summer as kids, playing catch with our grandpa." "This was just in his head, though, right?" Pike said. "He said it was real," Reggie said. "My brother was a straight shooter. I believe him." "Okay, and you say it happened another time? He went further back? More years?" "Yeah, but I give you enough, I believe. Something to work with. Or maybe it isn't. No skin off my back either way." Pike said, "Did he lose time when he went back? I mean, the same amount both places?" "That was the funny thing about it. He said he lost an hour." Pike wasn't sure what that meant, but he didn't want to irritate the guy anymore by over-asking stuff. He said, "But aliens caused it, you think? All of it? The extra strength? And the going back?" "Most definitely," Reggie said. "They screwed with his teeth." "There you go." This was unnerving for Pike, since some of it was starting to ring true, even if the rest was ludicrous. "Do you mean people from outer space? They abducted your brother and implanted him or something, like you see them talking about on the internet?" "No idea. He just told me they got to his teeth. This was from over there, he told me this, on Skype. Got beat by a roadsider, my little brother, not long after. Rest in peace." Reggie stared at the counter for a moment and composed himself. "Well, I appreciate this," Pike said. "Glad to be of help. Was it any?" "Oh, yeah," Pike said. "You gave me plenty to think about. What's your deal again? You say you got a super strong thing going on?" Pike wondered how much Kathy had told him, but again, what could it hurt? "I seem to, yeah, something to do with my teeth also." "Well, I got to hit the road," Reggie said. "Good luck with it. And watch out for those little fuckers." He got up and headed to the bathroom, and Pike figured that was his signal to leave. He drove the 20 minutes down the interstate, got off at the exit for 121, which took you back to Beacon. But there was in and out, and he was starving. Before he went in, he called Mitch. "You okay?" Pike said. Yeah, Mitch said, I'm running around a little more than I'm used to is all. I hope it's not on my account, Pike said, which it was, of course. Don't worry about it, Mitch said, I have a vested interest here as well. Pike told him the basics of his meetup with Reggie Riley, plus how Kathy had discovered that first posting on Mitch's website in the middle of the night, which was what led Pike to Mitch, Pike pointed out. Not that any of that logistical stuff mattered. Mitch worked it around. So what we've got, as the dust is settling, he said, four now, more or less confirmed, right? The Florida and Utah ones, my Texas guy, and now this Mr. Riley's brother. Oh, plus you, of course. Am I missing anyone else? There was Danny, but forget that for now. This one, it could be different, Pike said. The alien part. Well, did you ask him if his brother had been in a recent dental office? I should have. I was kind of afraid to. Now, why's that? Mitch said. He was a strange dude, all business, and like he may have had a short fuse. I'd put money on it that he was at this point, Mitch said. Something else, too, Pike said. He claims the guy went back in time, to when they were kids, which I chalk up to the brother hallucinating over there in Iraq or whatever, which is where he told Reggie this from. Very interesting, Mitch said. So that's why you're always asking me about traveling, whether it's theoretically possible. It seemed a bit odd for you to be concerned with. Pike left it alone. How'd he do it? Mitch said. No idea. Reggie didn't know either. They did their morning run, and then he went back to the back of the rear of the mess hall or something. Why am I even telling you? This is so lame. Might or might not be, Mitch said. Okay, anyhow, our news is we got the filling today. I had to sign for it and such, which was good. Geez, Louise, already? What, you got some problem with that now? Not at all, Pike said. I just didn't think it was a done deal so quick. What can I tell you? He wanted to get paid. Now I have to find the right lab. How's that work? Pike said. Not sure. Not something I do every day. I'm looking at trustworthy as the main criteria. You're worried about them not being thorough, you mean, with the test. I'm thinking more, Mitch said, that they don't get a notion to make off with the item, should it actually happen to be unique. That sounds very improbable, Pike said. Yeah, Mitch said, well, let me worry about that. What else you got? That's it. Everything else, it's pretty routine. Keep your radar up, Mitch said. Chapter 32. Friday night, a half hour before kickoff, Mr. Hill, the principal, got out there and did his thing, and the seniors all lined up on the 50-yard line and were introduced one by one, and after each introduction, that senior's parents would run onto the field and join them. Pike told his parents, bring Bo and Jackie on the field too, don't worry about any rules. They did, and it was a nice moment having the family together out there. Some of the players had girlfriends joining them as well, but Pike didn't have to worry about that at the moment. Though he was happy to see Hanamaker when he got introduced, that Hanamaker was not joined by Audra. He wondered, did that mean anything? But it probably didn't. Miramar had a decent quarterback, Pike had to admit. The truth was, the guy was much better than he was, if you take away the advantage. But hey, you were out here and you did what you had to do, and Hamilton got up by 21-7 early and then nursed it home. Pike didn't feel like he had a particularly big game, but when he saw the stats, he'd only had 4 incompletions and he threw for 3 touchdowns, so he had to call it good enough. The team went for ice cream after the game. There was a big place on McClellan Boulevard, a skate rink, that had party rooms and all that stuff. It's where you went for team get-togethers from Little League through kids soccer and CYO basketball on up. Tonight, Hamilton had booked the whole joint, including the skating. There was a surprising number of parents, not just the parents of the seniors, but plenty of others. About an hour into it, Pike was very surprised to see Mr. Fox out there on the rink, skating around with his wife. Pike stood at the railing watching them and contemplated this. Under normal circumstances, Fox would be recognized tonight too, on senior night. And under normal circumstances, he would still be the starting quarterback also. But that's getting off track. Mr. Fox had been coming to these team events since his kid was a freshman. And maybe this just happened to be another one of those. And whatever happened had nothing to do with him still supporting the team. Except it was all wrong. Mr. Fox shouldn't be here tonight. Pike watched him circle around, looking like he was having some fun out there, bopping a little bit to the music. They were playing oldies, and Pike guessed he and Mrs. Fox knew the words too. Finally, they took a break, and Mr. Fox took off his skates and told his wife he was going to the men's room. Pike followed him. Mr. Fox was at one of the sinks. He just rinsed off his face and was washing his hands when he saw Pike in the mirror standing behind him. He dried his hands and turned around. "Hello, son," he said. Pike was silent. "I know you replaced my boy and all," Mr. Fox continued, "but that has no bearing on the fact you've had a hell of a season. So congratulations. You've earned it. You deserve it." He offered to shake hands. Pike didn't answer, but took a step and a half forward and grabbed Mr. Fox by the hair. With his other hand, he grabbed his neck. He squeezed his windpipe. Mr. Fox gasped and turned red, and then began to turn white. Someone started yelling for Pike to let him go. It was one of the players. Pike didn't know who, and he didn't pay attention. Soon, three or four players were yelling at him, grabbing at him. He heard Marty Clark's voice in there now. "Gillette, it's not worth it." And Pike let go of Mr. Fox. A couple things occurred to him driving home. One, that felt good. No point denying it. Two, he could have killed Mr. Fox easily without realizing it, without meaning to. This needed to be a wake-up call. Pike was sitting on his bed debating, should he call Audrey? It was 20-12. Not call her to tell her about the thing with Fox's dad tonight, though she may have already heard about it, but to feel her out, is it still hot and heavy with Hanamaker? Part of him wanted to call Kathy too. He'd never thanked her after he met Reggie Riley, didn't give her any report on it, didn't even confirm that it happened. He was pretty damn sure she wasn't interested in a report, though. Kathy looked to be going with Julio Sandoval now, a Venezuelan kid who, for whatever reason, ended up at school this year. He was a nice guy, played soccer and smart, was taking AP courses, which Pike could never touch with a 10-foot pole. It was hard to tell if it was serious, but it was still tough seeing them together. Of course, the other side of it was Kathy was better off. He knew that. So he ruled out calling her, but was still debating, should he at least touch base with Audrey? When the phone buzzed and it was Mitch. God dang it. "What handed are you?" Mitch said. "Huh? Righty or lefty? Come on. Anyone tell you you've got weird questions late at night? Well, I throw right-handed." "Oh," Mitch said. He sounded deflated. "Why?" "That's nothing then," Mitch said. "Thought I was onto a little something, but back to the drawing board." Pike said, "To answer you more completely, I'm ambidextrous." "Oh, yeah?" Mitch was perking back up. "How about batting in baseball?" "Lefty," Pike said. "Writing?" "Left." "Painting?" Well, painting a picture, left. Painting a house, right. Kicking a ball, both. Eating, right. Pike was wondering now if Mitch was going to ask him how he wiped his ass, too. Because what we got, Mitch said, is all lefty so far, and you, who's in the ballpark. The Texas guy, plus Florida, plus Utah, all southpaws. Jeez, Pike said, this is what you needed to wake me up for? I believe it may hold some significance. Not sure what yet. Pike said, did you place that thing? Yeah, I got a guy, Mitch said. Lab in Culver City. We'll find out. Talk to you later. Pike remembered Pocatello was on mountain time, which was an hour ahead. That meant instead of it being around midnight here, it would be 5 to 1 out there. Still, for a Friday night, that didn't seem too late, did it? Danny sounded sleepy. Ooh, I woke you up, Pike said. Don't be lying to me that I didn't. You did, she said. What's up? Are you left-handed? Yes. Oh, okay, he said. Okay? Not a big deal, he said. Just thought I'd check on that. Has anyone told you you're peculiar? Danny said. But there was a familiar playfulness in her voice, and it was good to hear. Chapter 33. Kids were looking at Pike funny Monday morning as word obviously got around about the incident at the skating place. By lunchtime, the topic had started to wane, and by the end of the day, it was a non-issue. Pike feared something out of Coach at practice regarding it, especially since Coach had warned him after the Hanamaker thing, but Coach didn't bring it up. Pike thought either Coach didn't want to screw up the sectionals now by following through and disciplining him, or, more likely, Coach probably agreed with what he did, even though he would never say so. Pike never did speak to Audrey Friday night. He got thrown off when Mitch called, and then before he knew it, Sunday rolled around and he had to do this family thing in Bakersfield, which took forever, and by then it seemed like a good idea to leave her alone. He saw her a couple times on Tuesday, but she didn't make eye contact with him. Same thing on Wednesday when he saw her in the school library after seventh period. Pike was killing time before practice, checking Facebook but also Googling left-handed brain. He tried a few general left-handed searches after Mitch dropped that thing on him, but the results were way too complicated. So he was trying to narrow it down to left-handed something or others. Anyhow, Audrey was down one of the aisles pulling a book off a shelf. Pike gave her a tentative little wave and she didn't respond and went back to her business. It was tough to gauge, but Pike was pretty sure she was mad at him, or disappointed in him, or both. The sectional quarterfinal was Saturday. Hamilton was hosting the game, but if they won, the semis and finals would be on the road. They had a good record, 7-2, and they did run the table in league, but their CCF conference wasn't considered that strong, so teams with worse records got seeded higher, something Coach got hot about and tried to email an official on, but really he couldn't do anything about it. Pike was turning the key in his car door after practice on Thursday, and there was Audrey. She looked a little messed up now that he had a good look at her in the late afternoon light, and Pike wondered if she'd been sleeping okay. There could be nightmares as well. He hadn't even thought about that. Hey, he said. Hey back, she said. Pike, I've been wanting to speak to you. Uh-oh. Before we get into that, he said, let me make a preemptive strike. You don't have to. I ended it with Jack, if that affects anything at all. Wow. It took Pike a moment to process this one. Huh? So you're not going to ream me out about Mr. Fox? Or that comes next? Why would I? She said. Man, he read the room wrong. What a relief. No reason, he said. Does that mean you may want to do something again? Yes, she said. This time I promise you can tell me all your secrets. I won't run away. Pike said, that's good then, because I don't have any. Audrey said, I bet you do. There was a little gleam in her eye, and Pike's earlier impression of her not looking her best went out the window. Pike went home, but he asked Audrey if she wanted to study after dinner at Starbucks, and she said she'd look forward to it. The last thing he felt like doing tonight was studying, but he knew this was the only way he'd get her to go somewhere on a school night. She was very conscientious. He wondered if she still had her heart set on going back east to college, but it wasn't something he was going to bring up. He wolfed down a quick dinner and picked Audrey up at 7. Mr. Milburn waved hello from the living room. He was sitting there in his recliner, watching a sitcom that had a lot of processed laughter. He was drinking something that looked like bourbon or whiskey out of a thick glass with ice. Pike couldn't blame him. When they got in the car, Audrey said, You notice my dad? He never used to drink, just once in a while a light beer. Pike felt awful for the guy. Couldn't imagine the range of anger and emotion running through his veins. It were me, he said. I try to stay blitzed as much as possible, honestly. Except when old man Fox showed his face. Audrey let out a sigh. I appreciate what you did the other night. I really do. I just can't allow myself to think that way. Pike said, What? You don't agree with your dad and me that the man shouldn't be walking around? I just don't know, she said. In a perfect world, she started tearing up. Pike thought about stopping the car, but maybe letting her go wasn't the worst thing. She had to put on the good face at school all day and around town, so her real emotion probably needed to come out more than she was letting it. Oh, believe me, he said, if I could somehow create a perfect world, Mr. Fox wouldn't be in it. Audrey was crying full on, was holding his arm now when his phone buzzed, and it was Mitch. This was irritating, but now it seemed a good idea for a couple of reasons to pull over. They were on Cypress Street, a few blocks from Starbucks, and Pike shut off the engine. Audrey took her seatbelt off and slid next to him, and Pike put his arm around her and took Mitch's call. Slow down, Pike said after Mitch started in. Are you sure? Pike said. When? You said you trusted the place, he said. Okay, take it easy. We'll figure it out. It's not the end of the world, Pike said, and hung up with Mitch. Audrey lifted her head off Pike's chest and took a good look at him. She said, See, this is the thing. Huh? He said. I mean, you received a similar phone call that other time, too. At least your reaction seemed just as strange. And your question is, Pike said, are you a secret agent or something? Well, you must admit, that wouldn't be entirely off base, would it? Pike pulled her close so she would hopefully relax again. Fine, he said. I can see how it sounds a little off, and it is. Nothing to worry about, nothing illegal or anything like that. I'm helping this old guy in L.A. take care of something, and you have to believe me that we're better off all around leaving it at that. They sat there in silence for a while, and Pike stroked her hair, and Audrey's spirit seemed to improve. He wasn't much of a comedian, but he tried joking around a bit, and she laughed, though he was pretty sure it was out of politeness. So he said, Are you ticklish? Don't be silly, she said. Why would you ask that? Because I'm going to find out. He started working her under the armpits and she didn't react at first. See? I'm not, she said, but he kept going. Found the sweet spot apparently because she couldn't control herself, couldn't stop laughing, and was thrashing around trying to get away from his fingers. That's more like it, he said. You're a piece of work, you know that, she said. But she was smiling comfortably now, and it was great to see, even temporarily. So then, he said, All set to go do homework? Audrey was back in his arms, and it was tight quarters, the two of them kind of wedged together against the driver's door and steering wheel. That's certainly one option, she said. Or we could just hang out here. That would work, too. Nah, let's go study, Pike said. Oh, all right, then. Geez, I'm kidding, he said. What do you think I am? Audrey nestled in tight, and the car wasn't a bad place at all tonight, and for a couple hours, life was very good, such as it was. Chapter 34. Before he went to bed, he called Mitch. "Give me that again in case I missed something," Pike said. "I couldn't concentrate that well before." "What part of it is so hard to understand?" Mitch said. "This a-hole says he lost it." "The filling. What the hell else are we talking about here?" Mitch sounded like he was slurring his words slightly. "He and Mr. Milburn both now." "The guy you knew," Pike said, "at the lab?" "I didn't know anybody at the lab. I trusted this place, is all I can tell you." Pike was trying to visualize the whole thing. "So you go to pick up the test results and the item and you get zip all around?" Mitch said, "I call and they act weird. Even though today's when they told me they'd have it, Thursday. So I go in. The manager, the chief tech, whatever the frig he is, he makes a point of greeting me right away." So something's up," Pike said. "It's like he's rehearsed it," Mitch said. "His deepest apologies, but there's apparently been a mix-up, and we've been unable to relocate your sample. You believe this worm?" "First losing it, or pretending to," Pike said, "then having to talk like that." "Son," Mitch said, "pretending to is where we're at. We both know what they found." Pike had no idea, but it was tough seeing Mitch this upset, especially after all he'd been trying to do to help him get to the bottom of whatever this was. "Okay, I'm going to come down," Pike said. "We'll speak to the man and we'll straighten it out." There was a measured determination in the way Pike said it that startled Mitch for a second. "No, I'll figure out something," Mitch said. "You got high school and everything. You didn't sign up for this." Pike was thinking, "You got that right. I didn't sign up for turning into alt Superman either." "We have a playoff game Saturday," Pike said. "I'm free after that. This lab, when's it open?" Mitch wasn't going to fight him. If the kid wanted to come down, so be it. He looked it up. It says they're open straight Monday through Friday. "Or," Pike was saying, "we could speak to this manager person outside the lab. Any idea where he might live?" Holy mackerel, Mitch thought. Where's this kid going with this? "Okay, let's not go off the deep end here," Mitch said. But he was fingering the guy's card. He'd pick one up out of one of the plastic trays they had on the counter after the guy told him to his face that he was out of luck. Mitch's thought was to report the guy and the lab, but then what would you say? And who would you report it to? That would probably cause more trouble than you already had. And then for sure you never see that filling again. But yeah, he had the guy's name, Wayne Lucaris. He said, "And if we somehow did find him, as you say, outside of the lab, then what?" "I'm not sure," Pike said, but with that same matter-of-fact and almost eerily confident tone. Pike said he had to go, and Mitch poured himself another scotch and soda, sat back down at the computer, and started looking around. Chapter 35. It was Saturday, November now, the 5th, and it was nippy as Hamilton took the field to warm up for the sectional opener against Highland High School from Cottington. It felt more or less like a regular home game, except there were advertising banners around the perimeter of the field that announced the official corporate partners of the 2016 WCALF section playoffs. There was also a more professional PA announcer tonight. Mr. Gerund, the auto shop teacher, had been doing it all season, but the truth was, he was pretty shaking, getting names mixed up and even getting the score mixed up a bunch of times. So they had someone else take over. Pike focused enough to get the job done. He didn't have to do much. Highland was maybe the worst team they played all year, and in the locker room celebration after, Coach got asked about that by a media person, and he said they were tougher than they looked, but it was deceptive because we put it all together and controlled the game. That was ridiculous, of course. Highland was 4-5 on the season coming in, should never have been in any playoffs, but you couldn't control who you played. You just went out with the hand you were dealt. Pike got to thinking. In fact, it would be nice if that applied to stuff outside of football too. You go with the hand you're dealt. But of course, it wasn't that simple. Even though it was an easy game, there was a festive mood around town afterwards, since Hamilton over the years hadn't won a lot of playoff football games. There were parties lining up, and Pike asked Audrey what she wanted to do, and she said honestly, she'd love to go to the movies. Pike thought that sounded good too, for other reasons, namely less chance of him getting into some kind of trouble, which was following him around lately. So they went to the Multiplex 6 in Orland. Big place. You could roam around and they didn't check tickets once you were in. So Audrey and Pike started with one called Night Moving Jerry, about a guy in New York City who starts a moving business that only works at night because the traffic's too bad the rest of the time. Pike decided that wasn't a bad idea. Go against the grain. Stuff builds up, though, and Jerry has to start reacting, and he gets in over his head. Some of it was a little unreal, but it kept your interest, and Audrey said so, too. Then they sneaked into one that was supposed to be a comedy, but it had a serious undertone and plenty of sex and violence. Pike was concerned how Audrey might feel about all that these days, especially the violence, whether it might hit home, but she seemed okay and said she enjoyed it. This would have been a typical night. You go somewhere else now. Things just get started, but Pike took her home. He told her he had to drive to Manhattan Beach in the morning to help that older friend, which was the truth, though he left out the specifics. Audrey politely wished him a safe trip and kissed him goodnight. She didn't ask any more questions. Pike hoped he could level with her at some point and tell her, but there was a good chance that would never happen. Sunday morning, he left at 5, got down there at 8:30. Mitch was in the same spot on the pier, that same bench, the volleyball to the left, the surfers to the right, the Hermosa Beach pier in the distance. Traffic this time, or you beat it, Mitch said. Beat it. So what do we got? Pike said. Mitch had found the guy, this Wayne Lucaris. Luckily, his name wasn't that common. Plus, he was listed the old-fashioned way, according to Mitch. Online white pages, he said, getting rarer these days. Landline phone number and address right there on the screen. The mope lives in Santa Monica. So we ring the bell, Pike said, or what? That'd be one way, Mitch said. Pike could see Mitch was into this now. He'd cooled down a notch from the other night, but he was still plenty mad. And the other, Pike said, follow him someplace? Then talk to him. Yeah, Mitch said, if that proved to be a better fit. Pike said, you're starting to crack me up. Mitch waved his hand like, let's not get carried away. First things first, he said, my prediction is you're hungry. How did I know that? Well, I liked that place from last time, Pike said. I'll pay, which he could do if neither of them ordered too much. Not the way it works, Mitch said. You're on my turf. You don't open your wallet. Mitch was a good man. Pike felt a twinge of guilt for getting irritated at him. They went back to the Kettle, 3 blocks up Manhattan Beach Boulevard on the corner. Mitch asked how football was going. Well, we're in the semis of our little sectionals, Pike said. I realize I'd be more effective playing linebacker. You got that right, Mitch said, but quarterback's more fun. It can be. Thing is, it doesn't translate 100% to my new skill set. I mean, I can gun the ball all over the field, but it's not always easy to catch. Mitch said, if you ran it more, it would be interesting watching guys try to bring you down, though. Of course, that would attract plenty of attention. Yeah, the wrong kind, Pike said. On defense, I could do more that looked normal. And still do damage, you mean? I guess, yeah, if I was careful. Well, pro ball used to be different than it is now, Mitch said. There was an unwritten merit system for knockouts. Now the concussion rules have changed all that. Speaking of that, Pike said. That one dude who I tackled and had to go to the hospital, the game where I first noticed my thing, I heard he quit football. So you're correct, it's just as well. You aren't playing linebacker. Okay, forget football right now, Pike said. How would someone time travel? Gee, Mitch said, you are actually interested in this. Travel at the speed of light is what I read, Pike said. Would that really be one way? Well, not to get too technical, but that theory extends back to Einstein. Let's say you were in a spaceship moving at the speed of light and you had an identical twin who stayed on Earth. You would age significantly more slowly than he would. So, that's the foundation anyhow, Mitch said. It gets a lot more complicated. Wormholes, cosmic strings, closed curves such as the Gödel space-time. Ah, Pike said. Don't stress out trying to comprehend it all. Plus, there may be another way, not in the vocabulary of typical mainstream science, but right here in the noggin. Mitch's eyes were wide for emphasis, and he was pointing to the side of his head. Pike said, oh, no. Give me a break. You say that, Mitch said, but the Russians in particular in the 1960s made some astounding discoveries about the power of the mind. Our government won't admit it, but the Army and the CIA use remote viewers. You know what those are? Nope. People who can tap into the part of the brain that can see what's going on in other parts of the world. You combine that ability with a parallel universe, and you may very well be dealing with time travel. Pike cringed as he finished his blueberry muffin. I know, Mitch said. A lot to consume. I'm quite sure I don't believe Reggie Riley, Pike said, but just supposing I gave him the benefit of the doubt, he said his brother went out back of the mess hall or something. How would that work? Hard to know, Mitch said. He may have either tapped into some portal or created one on his own. Oh my God, Pike said. Anyways, this lab person, how shall we handle it, do you think? Good question. I tend to favor the direct approach until proven otherwise, Mitch said. Fine, Pike said. Hopefully it won't take long and I can get a move on back home. My girlfriend is curious. I thought she knew. Nah, this is a new one. Not going to make the mistake of telling her too, I don't think, or anyone else, hopefully. He was thinking about Danny, but didn't bring that up. Mitch said the guy lived on Chelsea Avenue, a block off Wilshire Boulevard, not too far from UCLA. They took the coastal route from Manhattan Beach up through El Segundo and Marina del Rey. It took them a half hour to get there. Okay, now let me do the talking, Mitch said. Pike said, fine, provided we've got the right guy and he's home and he doesn't slam the door in our face. Yeah, a lot of ifs, Mitch said, looking a little nervous as they got out of the car and crossed the street. It was a fourplex. You went into a lobby that didn't require a key, and then you found your apartment. They didn't see a bell for A2, so Mitch knocked. A little girl opened the door about 8 years old, which didn't seem responsible, but a woman was right behind her. Can I help you? She said, pleasant. Yes, please, and I hope I have the right address. I was looking for Wayne. Wayne appeared in sweats and slippers holding a coffee mug. He recognized Mitch, Pike could tell, but he pretended not to. Yes, Wayne, Mitch said. Mitch Corrigan from the other day? Wayne kept the pretense up for a moment and then said, oh yes, I believe I remember you, a customer, correct? Yep, Mitch said. It gets quite hectic at times, which I'm sure you can imagine, Wayne said. At any rate, is there something I can do for you? Mitch said, there is actually. We have some more information on that sample. We'd be glad to share it with you if you can spare a few minutes. Pike was hoping Wayne wouldn't invite them in, though that's where Mitch seemed to be going with it. Wayne deliberated a moment and said, well, I suppose if you feel this is so vital, please give me a second. He closed the door and Pike figured he was changing and getting ready to come outside, that he didn't want his family involved in this, and Wayne did just that. "We could take a ride. I can show you where I'm going with this," Mitch said. Wayne said, "How about a walk?" Mitch said that would work also, and the three of them went to the end of the block and turned left. "This is my nephew, by the way," Mitch said to Wayne. Pike smiled and shook hands with Wayne, going easy on him, but still making sure he screwed up a finger or two. Pike said it was good to meet him. Wayne looked alarmed and in quite a bit of pain. "No doubt about that," Mitch said. "You okay?" Nothing from Wayne. "See, here's the thing," Mitch said. "What happened to that felling?" Pike took a step closer to Wayne. "I had nothing to do with that, I swear on a stack of Bibles," Wayne said. "All's I did, I reported it to the head office, which we're required to do when something doesn't add up," Mitch said, "and then they swooped in, middle of the night, and stole it. When you came to work in the morning, the filling was AWOL." "Yes," Wayne insisted, "that's pretty close to what really did happen." "You know what," Mitch said, "you're a piss-poor liar." "What was in it?" Pike said. "Excuse me," Wayne said. "Well, you got mercury, silver, what else? Tin and copper, if I remember it right," Pike said. "Under normal circumstances." "Yes, that is correct," Wayne said, "and we determined those elements to be present." "What else was present?" Mitch said, "according to your very professional determination." "That was the spectrum," Wayne said. Pike grabbed Wayne by the right earlobe. Not much there in the way of nerve endings, but Pike figured he could pull Wayne's ear off if he gave it some downward effort. Of course, then you'd have a mess and the police sooner or later. The idea, Pike was deciding on the fly, was to make Wayne think he might pull his ear off. "All right, please now," Wayne said. It hadn't taken long, and Pike let go. "So you had something to add?" Mitch said. Wayne was sweating quite profusely and holding his right hand with his left. "There was something we couldn't identify," Wayne said, very quietly now. Mitch and Pike let that one settle. It was what they both suspected, even Pike by now, but there was something about hearing it this way, having it verified, that was a heavy load to process. After a minute, Mitch said to Wayne, "Enjoy your day, and when you find it, I'll be waiting to get it back." They watched Wayne kind of stagger down the block and turn the corner out of sight. "Anyhow," Mitch said, "you hungry again yet? There's a Chinese place on Wiltshire that I always like." "You want to know the truth?" Pike said. "Yeah, I'm starved out of my mind." Chapter 36. Driving home, Pike was thinking it didn't matter, really, did it? Whether Mitch ever got the filling back or to what extent the guy may be lying. Of course, it mattered if there was actually something. Pike hated to admit it, but was having trouble avoiding the real possibility now that was unworldly in the goddang thing. But the fact that Wayne admitted there was something in there they couldn't identify, that was a nugget you had to deal with whether you had the filling back or not. Also, if Wayne never produced the filling, Mitch would have to figure something out with a Texas guy, and if he had to give more money to settle things, Pike would try to pay that if he could. He could scramble and try to work more Sundays for Mac's dad. The main thing now, if his dentist and Danny's and probably Reggie Riley's brother's one, and the Texas guys and the Florida and New York peoples, if all those dentists stuck the same shit in each of their mouths, where did it come from? Pike stopped for gas and called Mitch. "I'm with you," Mitch said, "and I'm ahead of you. I'm working on it where dental offices get their amalgam. Is there one standard source, 100 sources, what?" "And to take it a step further," Pike said, "maybe was the Texas person's source the same as my source, in Albuquerque, I mean. You're preaching to the converted, Mitch said, which I appreciate. But go back to football and school and girlfriends. You have enough on your menu. I got this. Mitch was right, but when Pike got home, he texted Danny. He felt like catching her up. Plus, it was an excuse to say hello. She didn't answer or get back to him the rest of the night, at least not by 10 when Pike hit the sack. He was more than shot from the day's festivities and barely moved a muscle for 9 hours. Chapter 37. Monday, Pike was talking to Marty Clark at lunch in the main quad when his phone rang and it was Danny. You caught me off guard, he said. How are you? Pike turned his back on Clark and waved him away, trying to show he needed privacy. I have a 20-minute, Danny said, and I'm returning your message. Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I need to fill you in on something. It's private. Now's not the best time. That'll be fine, Danny said. Please don't think I forgot about you last night. No big deal at all. I was wiped out anyway, so I went to sleep. The reason, she said, is I'm dating someone. I'm very excited. Ah, no, Pike said. I know what you're thinking. Please don't go there, she said. I won't. This other thing, you'll want to hear about it, I think. Fine, call me tonight. The best time's around 9:30. I will, he said. I'll look forward to it. Me too. Have a good rest of the day. I miss you, by the way. I miss you too, he said, and got off. That sounded interesting, a girl's voice said, from off to the right. It was Audrey, unfortunately. Marty Clark had left, and Audrey had shown up now, giving him space and patiently waiting while he finished his call. Things would have been better if he knew she was there. Pike fumbled around, starting to talk and then stopping. Finally, he just said, "That wasn't what you think. Not even close." The bell rang, and Audrey was in no hurry to get inside, nor was Pike. "Fair enough," she said. "The funny thing is, I believe you, or at least I wish to believe you." Her voice went up high on the second "you," Pike thinking that's all the poor girl needs right now. He said, "This is an older woman, sort of a long-lost cousin. She's going through some stuff. It's hard to explain." "I see. How old exactly?" Audrey said, "if I'm not prying too deeply." 26. Pike remembered it from the newspaper. There was no point in lying about it. Audrey was giving it some thought. "Was this cousin person part of your recruiting trip, where you flew out to the college and such?" "Sort of," Pike said. He wanted to disappear. If he could tell her the whole thing, not an option, though. "I did wonder a bit why you didn't return my text," she said. It took Pike a second to place this, and then he remembered he never got back to her from the Saturday football game out there. He was so focused on Danny that he forgot. Maybe that was part of why she'd picked up again with Hanamaker when he got back from Utah. These things didn't take much to go sideways. It was all about communication, obviously, and unfortunately. "That was my fault," Pike tried, "not answering you from out there. There was no excuse for that, but can you please accept that this person had nothing to do with it?" To his shock, Audrey smiled and said, "I accept," and she put her arms around his back and locked her hands. Pike looked down at her and ran his fingers through her hair. "Geez, what a relief," he said, "and pretty amazing, actually. I wouldn't have accepted it, that's for sure." Audrey shot him a slightly mischievous look, but she was still smiling, and they kissed each other goodbye and hustled to class.